Hello, welcome to the Talking Michigan Transportation Podcast. I'm Jeff Cranson. This week, Governor Whitmer signed some historic legislation here in Michigan that will enable our first high occupancy vehicle, or carpool lanes as they're often known, on a segment of I-75 in Oakland County, north of Detroit. Very busy segment. In fact, some of the probably heaviest traffic volumes in the state. This has been in the works for quite some time and got through the legislature just last week and did not take long to get from the governor's desk to her pen. So first I'm going to talk to Mark Dubay, who was on just a few weeks ago talking about this. He's the project manager, and he can talk about the implementation and the schedule and how that will go. Later, I'll talk with Larry Dwyer, who is the program director of operations at the American Association of State Highway Transportation Officials. And he'll give us the broader perspective on high occupancy vehicle lanes and other kinds of managed lanes and things that are being done across the country to make commutes smoother and more predictable, and at the same time reduce congestion, help air quality, lower emissions, and also, save the burning of fossil fuels. Again, I'm with Mark Dubay, who was the project manager on the massive I-75 modernization project. And Mark, I kind of feel like, with respect to Etta James, that you must be singing At Last this week, having the governor sign what is really historic legislation for Michigan to implement its first HOV lanes. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, Jeff, it's really exciting. You know, there's been a lot of work over the past many years to build out the I-75 modernization, not just the last piece of it, but, you know, the several other segments one and two that were built previously. And the HOV legislation, which allows us to open the HOV lane within the corridor, is really the last, you know, big piece to the puzzle to finishing work in the corridor. So really exciting. You know, we've been talking about HOV and bringing it to Oakland County for a long time, and really excited to hopefully have the lanes open by the end of October.
Give us some of the logistics again. How many miles? What the segment parameters are, and hours of the day. You know, all those things.
Sure. The HOV lanes operate within the overall I-75 modernization limits, not the whole limits. They will be from 12 Mile Road north to South Boulevard. It's about 14 miles each direction, so 28 total lane miles within the corridor. It's the left or innermost lane on northbound and southbound I-75, so one lane each direction, left lane, 12 Mile north to South Boulevard. That is going to be an HOV lane. And for anyone that's not familiar with that, it's a high occupancy vehicle lane, which would require two or more people or human occupants in the car to use the lane during peak travel times. So what that means for the I-75 corridor is Monday through Friday peak travel times in the AM and PM, which is 6 AM to 9 AM and 3 PM to 6 PM. To use the new HOV lane, you will need to have two or more occupants in the car. It's also eligible for motorcycles, transit buses, emergency responders. And then outside of those hours, the remaining hours of the day, it will be a general purpose lane, just like any other lane within the I-75 corridor.
So can those hours be tweaked at some point? I mean, for a large part, I think a lot of people have returned to pre-pandemic routines, but not everybody. Those are pretty traditional commuting hours. I guess, are those arrived at in cooperation with the Federal Highway Administration, or is that just based on traffic volumes and research?
It's based on traffic volumes and research. And, you know, that's something that's going to be ongoing. The monitoring of the HOV lane is going to continue after opening. So we will continue to get traffic counts on a regular basis and evaluate the work hours. So if needed, we can adjust in the future. The work hours within the corridor are static signs, so they're not, you know, easily changed.
So talk about where we are now. We're recording midweek, probably releasing this on October 12th. And it sounds like you're hoping that on Monday, October 16th, the contractor will hit the ground running and start doing all the prep work to get the lanes open. So what has to happen now?
Yeah. So for anyone that's, you know, not familiar with the I-75 corridor, the HOV lane goes through segments 1, 2, and 3. Segments 1 and 2 were previously constructed and completed, and the HOV lane was built and striped out, cross-hatched out, so it looks like a big shoulder within the corridor. With the passing of the legislation, PK will be on site Monday morning, northbound and southbound I-75, to start removing the cross-hatching that is blocking the lane out, and then placing permanent pavement markings and uncovering signs within the corridor to facilitate the opening to traffic.
Is there anything else that that they need to do? I mean, that doesn't sound like a lot of heavy lifting.
No, that's, you know, all the lanes have been built, so we need to remove the existing edge lines, cross hatching, and then once we get final permanent pavement markings, all of the permanent signs, which will designate the beginning, the ending, and the operational, you know, the eligibility, hours of use, all that kind of stuff within the corridor have been installed and covered. So once we get permanent pavement markings, we will uncover the signs and open to traffic. That should be a couple weeks worth of work and should have northbound and southbound HOV lanes within the whole corridor open by the end of the month.
How do they remove the cross hatching? Are they going to grind that off, or was that put on as some kind of decal?
No, they're painted on, so they'll blast those markings off like they would remove any other edge line or pavement marking on the within the corridor.
I guess the part of this ongoing effort will be education, as we try to let people know, you know, both north and south of the corridor, you know, what to expect and how it works and all of those things. What have you found anecdotally just in talking to people, either, you know, people in the area that may be using it, or just, you know, your friends and neighbors when you talk about this?
I think, you know, as we start looking to educate people on what is an HOV lane, who can use it and all that, and what it means for everyone traveling the I-75 corridor, I think the anecdotally, the one thing I think a lot of people don't realize in Michigan is how long HOV lanes have been around and how other states have used them for so many years to manage traffic and congestion within areas like the I-75 corridor.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's what I hear too. And I hear from a lot of people that that hope that there can be more and more flex routes like we have on US 23 north of Ann Arbor, and we'll soon have on I-96 in western Oakland County. There's definitely some good candidates for that elsewhere in the state. Anything else you want to say about this, Mark? I want to say congratulations again to you for persevering through this. You're not usually involved in the political process, but you had to follow it closely and be at the table to help testify and help lawmakers understand as these bills made their way through.
Yeah, no, thanks, Jeff. It was a good experience, you know. I'm glad we got a lot of support from our legislative partners to move the legislation through quickly to facilitate opening of the lanes in the corridor, you know, to coincide with finishing of construction. The only thing I'd like to say, you know, and you touched on it a little bit earlier, we are going to have a large communication education effort rolling out to educate people on, and, you know, what are HOV lanes, who's eligible to use them, what does it mean if I use them when I'm not supposed to use them, and a lot of other useful information. I-75 project has its own website, modernize75.com. We've already updated the website to include a lot of information on an HOV lane and who can use it and all that kind of information. So please check it out, and we will have a lot more information rolling out over the next couple weeks, you know, flyers, videos, you know, a lot of different stuff to help educate the public on what these lanes are and who can use them.
Yeah, we'll definitely link to the site in the show notes. And yeah, I highly recommend people check out the site and check out some of the videos that are short and sweet and very instructive about how this works. And you know, really, it's all interesting. It's a major step forward for Michigan and for mobility. So thanks, Mark. I appreciate you taking time again.
Jeff, thanks for having me on. Looking forward to having this new tool within MDOT's toolbox to help us manage traffic.
That's a good way to put it. Stick around. There's more to come right after this short message.
Hey, did you see that sign on the side of the road? What about those workers? Are you even paying attention to how you're driving? Work zone awareness takes all of us.
We're back, and as promised, I'm with Larry Dwyer, who is the Program Director of Operations for AASHTO, the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. I wanted to talk with him to get a broader perspective on HOV lanes as Michigan makes this historic step again with Governor Whitmer signing the bills this week on Tuesday. And we expect full implementation in about 3 weeks as they prep the lanes and get ready to remove the hash marks, as mentioned earlier. Larry, thanks for taking time to be here.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And congratulations to all the folks in Michigan. I've been working hard to get those HOV lanes up and running.
Yeah, it's been in discussion for a long, long time and got some traction a few years ago and then kind of, you know, died in the legislative session. And this time with the project finishing up and federal funds on the line, there was incentive to get it over the finish line. And we did. Give me your kind of high level view, I guess, when you talk to people, you know, family, friends, plain old folks about HOV lanes and the virtues.
Sure. When I talk to friends, family about HOV lanes, you know, they've been around for a while, but sometimes people wonder why we've kind of dedicated these lanes. And really, when you get down to it, it's about improving air quality and managing or reducing congestion. And HOV lanes, the goal is to move people more efficiently during peak traffic hours and allow for quicker travel and more reliable movement of people. HOV projects and lanes really increase the number of people rather than the number of vehicles being carried on a freeway or roadway. Yeah, and it usually results in savings of travel time and more predictable travel time. So that's the real goal of the operational improvement for the freeways or the highways.
Well, thinking like an operations person, talk about why making things more predictable just makes things safer. I don't know if a lot of people make that connection, but it stands to reason that one of the reasons people take chances and do things that cause crashes is because of unpredictability in travel times and what to expect, right?
Right. And now you're seeing in more and more areas the combination of multiple systems to help ensure safety and travel time and reliability. For example, you'll see the message boards at the outskirts to a lot of urban areas that will tell you it's 20 minutes to the city center or 30 minutes to the city center. And maybe it's 18 minutes or 17 minutes in an HOV lane. So it gives people that sense of they know how long it's going to take them to get where they're going. And maybe that reduces a bit of the anxiety level or the frustration level for folks when they're trying to get where they're going. And that's a big issue for shippers, too, not only, you know, folks who are commuting every day, but people at UPS and FedEx pay a lot of attention to travel times and reliable travel times so they can plan their schedules for delivering goods and services to people.
I suspect that a lot of people, you know, this is political because everything is in this day and age, that some of the opposition comes from people who think that this is all part of a you know, grand plan to, I guess, foment fears of climate change. And you talked about cleaner air and those things, but this really doesn't break down in red states or blue states. I mean, Texas has them, Tennessee has them, Utah has them. So what do you hear when you talk to, you know, colleagues across the country about this and, you know, either pro or con?
We see it more and more states going to this HOV, using HOV lanes, and congestion is recognized across the country really is a growing problem. And I'll give you an example. The U.S. has close to 4 million miles of roads and bridges and highways that support all kinds of economic and social activity. But while the miles of urban roadways have increased by about 65% since 1980, the vehicle miles traveled on urban roadways has increased by 150%. So as a result, traffic in a lot of metropolitan areas has become increasingly congested. And costing, you know, more in time and fuel. So HOV lanes are one of the tools in the toolbox for states to utilize. It's really their call on a state to select the best type of projects they think will help their transportation system. But as you noted, across the country, we're seeing more and more states go to HOV lanes or something like that. At the moment, there are about 24 states in Puerto Rico that have some type of HOV or express lanes or carpool lanes, as a lot of people call them.
So, yeah, I don't want to throw cold water on what Michigan has done, but I feel a little bit like, you know, we're leaping into the 20th century and the 21st century. What do you see as the future for these kinds of lanes and managed lanes and more states going to high occupancy toll lanes? Do you think that's a trend that will continue?
I think so. And again, it's all about using the roadway and the network efficiently. In high occupancy toll lanes, that's come about when some states and urban areas have seen HOV lanes, frankly, not always being utilized as best they could be. So they introduce tolling to get some greater use out of the lanes and continue to move people and goods quickly and efficiently and safely. I think you're going to continue to see that. They're really attractive in providing savings and travel time and reliability. And it's encouraged, I think, commuters from driving alone to consider using a bus or carpooling or vanpooling. And I think you're going to continue to see that. And a number of states also allow electric vehicles or partial electric vehicles or alternative fuel vehicles into these lanes as well, again, to improve air quality and help reduce congestion.
So talk a little bit about enforcement and what you've seen across the country. I think every state probably does it differently. And, you know, do you think enforcement is important to compliance?
I think so, and that's what we've seen across the country. And enforcement is one of the requirements when a state goes to an HOV lane. That's one of the federal requirements. And it's critical to the success of any type of HOV facility. Experience has shown that violation rates increase significantly when people in the traveling public perceive that the HOV lanes and restrictions aren't being enforced. And then that leads to greater problems and increases the range of enforcement problems. Enforcement approaches being considered across the country at this point include automated enforcement techniques, ticket by mail programs, stiffer fines, and really building strong relationships between the enforcement agencies and the court systems to ensure lane violation enforcement will be upheld.
Yeah, so there's definitely a correlation. I mean, it only makes sense. And it's important to note here, too, that this isn't done, you know, as far as I know, by anybody, by any state, as just an incentive to pad your coffers with fines. The ideal situation would be that there didn't have to be any enforcement because there was massive compliance. So talk more broadly, I guess, about operations and what it means to to be a program director for operations for a national organization like this, and all the things that you're looking at all the time to try to make our commutes, you know, smoother and safer.
In operations, we're looking at improving traffic operations, freeway operations across the country and in urban areas and in rural areas too. And there's more and more a greater linkage to safety and using technology to help improve safety on the roadways, but also in the vehicles, and to reduce the overall number of crashes and deaths on the highway system. So we have committees for operations within AASHTO, made up of all the different state DOTs across the country. And then we also work closely with our federal partners and some of our other partners here in Washington, D.C., with some of the auto manufacturers and technology folks, looking in how to improve highway operations and traffic operations across the country, and really kind of focusing nowadays on how we use technology to better do that, and everything from travel times to the real-time maps that you can get through the 511 automated systems that are across the country. And that in most cities you see on the news every morning, that's a big part of it, along with the weather, is what are the travel times for the day, if there are any weather issues on the roadways, or if there's any crashes or incidents that people need to avoid or plan for extra time. It's really an exciting area. I think you're seeing more and more on vehicles that not only airbags, but things like automated braking, rear traffic cross alert, blind spot monitoring, all these things that help improve the driving experience and the safety, and really prevent crashes and help safely move people and goods every day across the country. So it's really an exciting area to be working in right now.
Yeah, I've often thought that given the popularity of those advancements, which came long after anti-lock brakes, which, you know, used to only be available on high-end cars and now people take for granted, that we do these incremental things. And if you ask people about each one, they'll say, yeah, that's great. That makes me safer. And then they'll say, do you want automated vehicles? And they'll say, no, I'm not ready for that. So it's a very incremental approach, I think.
Yes.
So thanks, Larry, for taking time to do this. I think a lot of people probably aren't aware that there are people like you at AASHTO and at NHTSA and at Federal Highway and at state DOTs, traffic safety engineers, people studying operations, thinking every day about what to do to try to make us safer and trying to keep up, because it seems like the more we do to try to make us safer, the more we figure out to make us not so safe when we're driving. I think you have job security.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Great talking with you today.
Yeah, you too. I'd like to thank you once more for tuning in to Talking Michigan Transportation. You can find show notes and more on Apple Podcasts or Buzzsprout. I also want to acknowledge the talented people who help make this a reality each week, starting with Randy Debler, who skillfully edits the audio, Jesse Ball, who proofs the content, Courtney Bates, who posts the podcast to various platforms, and Jackie Salinas, who transcribes the audio to make it accessible to all.